Chapter 8. Nick, Kate, Quentin, and the professor were on the Eurostar train, speeding through France, destination Metz. From there, they would catch another train into Germany, where they'd meet Kate's father at the Munich airport. "I have to admit," Nick said, sitting next to Kate, "I wasn't 100% sure you'd come help us." "What else am I supposed to do?" she asked. "Go home and sit in my cubicle while you have all this fun?" "Well, I think you deserve a little more thanks. Maybe I can make you breakfast in bed sometime." "Only if it's waffles and real maple syrup," she said, "not the fake stuff." "It's a deal." "Just promise me one thing," she said. "Anything." "You don't go off the reservation again. That goes for your father, too. If I'm on the team, I'm on the team all the way." Nick put his head back against the seat, closed his eyes, and smiled. "I'm going to need a verbal promise from you, Nick." "Yes, I promise." In the row ahead of them sat Quentin Fox and Professor Lewis. Lewis was practically vibrating with nervous energy. Instead of having tea at his little house on the Channel, he was speeding into the heart of Europe, following a cryptic set of clues to an unimaginable treasure. This was slightly more exciting than grading papers. "Nick always did love trains," Nick overheard his father saying. "He used to play with them for hours when he was growing up." Nick leaned over the seat. "No, that was you, Dad. You were the train nerd. I was the one buying them, sure. But that was all for you." Nick nodded and smiled, then closed his eyes again. Some things aren't worth arguing. When Jake O'Hare walked through the customs gate, Kate was waiting for him. She gave him a hug, and then she stood waiting for more. Jake pulled out a big jar and gave it to her. "Thank God," Kate said. "Can you even imagine an entire continent of people who never eat peanut butter?" Jake O'Hare was an ex-Marine, currently retired and living in a garage casita behind Kate's sister Megan's house in Calabasas, California. He was square-jawed, square-shouldered, barrel-chested, and big-boned. His gray hair was still buzzed to military specifications. He walked with a slight limp, the result of an injury he'd sustained on a mission that he still insisted was classified.
"Never thought we'd both get back to Germany at the same time," Jake said. "How long has it been?"
"I was just a kid," Kate said. When she was 16, she and her sister had lived on the USAG Stuttgart base with their father. It was there that Jake had taught her how to drive, but with his own unique twist. From the beginning, he had challenged her on the driving course with obstacles and oil slicks, and had even shot out her tires one time, just to make sure she'd be ready for anything.
"Nick Fox," Jake said, shaking the younger man's hand and nearly crushing most of Nick's metacarpal bones. "What have you gotten my daughter into now?"
"The usual amount of trouble," Nick said. "Jake, this is my father, Quentin." The two men shook hands, sized each other up.
"Heard a lot about you," Quentin said.
"And this is Professor Lewis," Nick said, "from Oxford University." The professor gave him a slight bow, perhaps sensing that he'd never write again if he shook hands with the man.
"Gentlemen," Jake said, "I flew over here because Kate asked me to. She said I'd get the full story when I was on the ground. So here I am."
"It's Munich, and it's lunchtime," Nick said. "Let's go have some brats and a few beers." They found a little Brauhaus where they could grab an isolated table in the back garden. Once the food and beer were delivered, Quentin launched into the story, starting with the Brotherhood contacting him about infiltrating the Vatican Museum and stealing a 75-year-old map, his own investigation into the group, what they stood for, and how they had contracted with the Rotorstern Corps to help recover the 400 tons of Raubgold, and how Quentin had decided to find the gold himself before they could get near it. Jake listened carefully. When Quentin finished the story by recounting the theft at the Vatican, the gunfight at the London safe house, and then the trip to the top of the Eiffel Tower, any normal father would have pulled his daughter aside and made immediate arrangements to fly them both home on the next plane. Instead, Jake ran one hand through the stubble on his head, looked over at his daughter, and asked her one question.
"What can I do to help?"
"We need climbing gear," Kate said.
communications equipment, and weapons. I have a contact here who can get us anything we need, Jake said. Where's the next mission anyway? You know how I never wanted to be a princess when I was a little kid? That was your sister, Jake said. You want her to be a ninja. Well, it's too bad Megan's not here, Kate said. Because we're going to Cinderella's castle. It was another two-hour train ride from Munich to the Bavarian town of Hohenschwangau. As soon as they stepped out onto the station's outdoor platform, they saw the spires of Neuschwanstein Castle rising 1,000 feet above the tree line. Piece of Kuchen, Nick said, looking up and blinking in the glare of sunlight. They checked into a small inn and then gathered outside in a private courtyard to plan out their next steps. I've been studying the symbols on the second map, Lewis said, tapping on his laptop. They are all like links in a chain. In the first link, there was a rune meaning up, just above the banner, indicating that the next link would be found at the highest point of the tower. But here in the second link, the rune is next to the swan in Schwanenritter, which helps answer another question. Why did the creator of this link use the general Schwanenritter when he could have used the specific name Lohengrin? Cut to the chase, Nick said. What does this all mean? The rune next to the swan indicates food or mouth. So you're looking for a swan in the castle, and inside the swan's mouth is the next link, Nick said. Correct. So we should start by taking a scouting mission to the castle, Nick said. An hour later, they were all on the public shuttle to the castle. It ran for miles, up the steep access road. Jake and Kate looked out one side of the shuttle, watching the road and the forest that lay beyond it. Nick and Quentin looked out the other side. The professor read the little guidebook he had picked up at the ticket stand. Much of the castle's interiors are still unfinished, Lewis said. That's good news. Nick looked over at him, then at the 20 other people who were on the shuttle. He had heard 4 or 5 languages being spoken, but he was sure half the bus probably spoke some English. He put one finger to his lips. Lewis got the message, nodded, and made like a man locking his mouth up tight and throwing away the key. When the shuttle van reached the top, it drove through a great stone archway. They all noted the massive iron gate that would slide shut after hours. When the vehicle stopped and everyone got off, they also spotted the 2 German police officers standing by the entrance, a hard-looking man and a woman who, Nick thought, looked like she could kick the man's ass and their asses at the same time. They had eagles on their badges, meaning Bundespolizei, the federal police. What were they doing here? You don't deploy your top police resources guarding a tourist site. Unless that was exactly the point. The Vatican and the Eiffel Tower both get hit within days of each other. Maybe Interpol was advising its member countries to keep a close eye on all major cultural sites. If that's true, Nick thought, our lives just got a lot more complicated. The group was led past a kiosk where everyone received an audio device with the tour information recorded in several different languages. A sign reminded them that any form of photography was strictly forbidden on these grounds. That was Nick's cue to glance over at the police officers, then start the micro 4K video recorder he had peeking out of his shirt pocket. Jake, Kate, Nick, and Quentin let Professor Lewis go ahead of them so they could lag behind the rest of the group. The entrance led directly to a spiral staircase that went up 100 feet to the main level of the castle. The first window appeared, blocked with 3 iron bars. Nick tried to look downward to judge the distance, but all he could see was the tops of the trees below. He turned to Kate and shook his head. Kate put the audio device in her ear to hear the recorded tour. Nick didn't bother with the audio. His job was to look for creative ways to get in and out. When they reached the main level, they saw the first painting decorating the great foyer. It was a swan. Nick turned his head and saw another swan, then another. Kate came over to stand next to him, took the audio device from her ear. You remember that opera the professor was telling us about? Kate asked. The Swan Knight? Nick nodded. The guy who built this castle. He wasn't just a fan of Wagner's. He was the official president of the fan club, And this castle we're standing in right now was basically his love letter to swans. Nick smiled. This is getting more fun by the minute. He stayed close to Kate as she trailed behind the rest of the tour, moving from one elaborately decorated room to another. Jake and Quentin stayed just ahead of them, ready to distract any tour guides who came looking for the stragglers. There were two separate throne rooms, a great hall, and several royal bedrooms. Professor Lewis might have been right about much of the castle being unfinished, but there was still plenty of castle that was finished, and it was all finished with swans. Nick stopped counting at 70. They caught up to Professor Lewis at the end of the tour. He was staring intently at a fresco on the ceiling. "It's one of the most remarkable things I've ever seen," he said. "I don't know why I ever put off coming here." He turned to them and said, "I don't know if you noticed, but there are quite a few swans here." When they were back at the inn, Nick called the team together in the courtyard. "The federal police are on site," he said. "Is there any reason to believe they know we're going to hit this place?" "I can't imagine how they'd know that," Quentin said. "The Brotherhood might," Nick said. "If Interpol is leaking to them, maybe the leak goes both ways." "I told you, there's no way they'd know the castle is next," Quentin said. "They don't have the map." "But they must know that the map is going to lead you to some place that's important," Nick said. "How many major tourist sites are there?" Quentin asked. "If we're talking all of Europe." "We're not," Nick said. "From what we know of the map's history, the sites would only be found in countries that were once controlled by the Axis powers, like Italy and France, and obviously Germany," Quentin said, thinking it over. The professor was sitting by himself at another table nearby, going through Nick's video footage. "I don't see how the next link can be hidden in a swan's mouth if the swan is just part of a painting," he said. "Although I suppose you could construct a little tramp door, or maybe in one of these tapestries. You could cut a flap in the fabric. The map could be behind it." The video tilted upward, pausing at a great swan carved into the wooden pilaster against the wall. "King Leopold had carpenters working on this room for 4 years," Lewis said. "There could be a hidden compartment in one of these carvings." The video tilted all the way up to the ceiling, which featured a swan gracefully posed in a pond. "If it's that swan," Lewis said, "then we're in quite a pickle." "Yeah, it's a pickle, all right," Jake said. "We used to call missions like this 1%ers. "Meaning 1% chance of success?" Quentin asked. "I've been on a few of those myself." Jake smiled. "I'm not trying to be pessimistic. As a matter of fact, 1%ers are usually the most fun. There's no pressure when you're trying to do the impossible." "So when do we move?" Kate asked. "There's a new moon tonight," Jake said. "I say we go get ready."